I want him dead.
Chicago.
I want him dead.
He pulls a knife.
Who's the U-boat commander?
You pull a gun.
Hi, dudes.
That's nasty. Why?
That's Chet, Gary.
Now, Dustin Kaufman presents the ultimate Chicago movie cage match. Bueller.
Tell me your children.
It is the ultimate Chicago movie cage match here on WGN Radio. Our quest to find the best Chicago movie of all time. We started a couple weeks ago back with 64 films. We let the WGN Radio staff vote on the first two rounds to get us to this point, which we're wrapping up the Sweet 16. You call in, you text, you vote online for your favorite, and you really give us the reason why. 312-981-7200. Last time we tussled about the film About Last Night. It moved on, joining Ferris Bueller, Blues Brothers, Adventures in Babysitting, and The Untouchables in the round of eight. Tonight, the matchup is intense. The comedy Wayne's World versus the comedy High Fidelity. It's Saturday Night Live versus Nick Hornby. It's Mike Myers and Dana Carvey versus John Cusack and a young Jack Black. It's Aurora Cable Access versus the Wicker Park Record Store. It's two movies that love music and use it in the premise.
People worry about kids playing with guns or watching violent videos. Some sort of culture of violence will take them over. Nobody worries about kids listening to thousands, literally thousands of songs about heartbreak, rejection, pain, misery, and loss. Did I listen to pop music because I was miserable? Or was I miserable because I listened to pop music?
I think we'll go with a little Bohemian Rhapsody, gentlemen.
Good call.
I see a little silhouette of a man.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do?
It's sentimental, tacky crap. That's why not. Do we look like the kind of store that sells I just called to say I love you? Go to the mall.
Actually, it's pronounced Miliwake, which is Algonquin for the good land.
Does this guy know how to party or what?
Huh?
Now, why would you sell it to me and not to him?
Because you're not a geek, Lewis.
You guys are snobs.
No, we're not.
No, seriously, you're totally elitist. You feel like the unappreciated scholars, so you're shit on the people who know less than you.
No.
Which is everybody.
Yeah.
No stairway. Denied.
You gotta kick it off with a killer to grab attention. Then you gotta take it up a notch. But you don't wanna blow your so then you gotta cool it off a notch. There are a lot of rules. Anyway, I've started to make a tape in my head for Laura.
We're not worthy! We're not worthy!
When I fall in love with you.
The number is 312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you tonight on why you think High Fidelity or Wayne's World should join those other films in the Elite Eight. On the phone tonight to rep Wayne's World is Eve Ewing. Eve is the author and poet, and she's a sociologist. She's the author of the book Electric Arches and 1919, a poetry collection centered around the Chicago race riot of 1919. The Cut actually called Eve the true mayor of Chicago. She's repping Wayne's World. Eve, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I'm homesick, so I'm going to try to not sneeze too much on the phone. But something that's not in my bio is that I am a lifelong Wayne's World super fan. I love this movie, so I'm really excited that I get to rep it tonight.
Very exciting. All right, and you will be going up against our very own Pete Zimmerman, who's repping High Fidelity, a movie he says is going all the way to the championship. Pete, are you excited to rep this film?
I am excited.
Well, I'm thankful for both of you being here. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. We'll get to your texts and your your calls. But when I threw out the email to say you want to be a part of this, what was it about Wayne's World that grabbed you, Eve?
So, like I said, I just, for some reason, Wayne's World, I watched it at way too young an age. It came out in 1992, and I probably saw it shortly thereafter. So I remember watching it for the first time when I was, like, maybe in second grade. And it's just a movie that I love. I used to own it on VHS, and I would watch it all the time. It's probably, like, one of my most quotable movies in terms of, that's, like, a secret fact about me is I can probably recite most of the movie from memory.
There's a lot of people on Twitter, like, Eve is doing Wayne's World? Like,
yeah, I love Wayne's World. I mean, after you and I agreed that Widows was not going to be in contention, I think that Widows is the greatest Chicago movie of all time. I'm just putting that out there. Or it's the most it's the most accurate Chicago movie of all time. But yeah, I have a lot of love for Wayne's World. Fun fact about me. Surprise.
I've given my mea culpa on Widows a couple of times. There have been a couple of different panelists who have grilled me about why Widows is not here. But
It's okay. It doesn't need to deign to compete with the other films. It's all right.
That's right. All right. So why High Fidelity, Pete? Why were you like, this is the one that I want in on?
High Fidelity was the movie that touched me the most. This was happened in 2000, and it was exactly what my Chicago was like. Wicker Park, record stores, criticizing people about their musical tastes. It just touched me.
Well, there's already people are weighing in, and they're saying Wayne's World excellent. You're going to get a lot of that tonight. But, you know, there is going to be a little bit of tension because, you know, Wayne's World, as it is set in Aurora, which we've determined as judges that that is the Chicago area. That's a Chicago film. But the film itself was mostly shot, if not all, in California. So the question becomes, this is one of those, and Dark Knight felt lost its Sweet 16 matchup to About Last Night because there was enough fervor around the idea that it was shot here, but it was set somewhere else in Gotham City. This is the flip side where you're seeing not shot in Chicago, but set in Chicago. So that's gonna that could play in this competition tonight.
Controversy, very controversial.
A lot of controversy. All right, 312-981-7200. We'll take our first break here. We'll come back and we'll get deeper into why Wayne's World or why High Fidelity. It's the ultimate Chicago movie cage match here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. You're listening to WGN Radio, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. It's our ultimate Chicago movie cage match. Eve Ewing is with us as well as Pete Zimmerman as we're fighting it out between Wayne's World and High Fidelity tonight. The poll that was up on WGN Radio.com, which we had on our Facebook page, and it's been over thousands of votes on this, has right now a decisive lead for Wayne's World, Eve. 61%.
Wow, look at that. The people are speaking.
38% for High Fidelity. But, that's just part of it, in the sense that we'll see how this kind of plays out. If it goes way High Fidelity's way, we have to point that out. We have to adjust the poll, so it's not just about the poll. So why don't we do this? Let's start with Pete Zimmerman. Pete, High Fidelity, why should it move on?
On the spirit of High Fidelity, Justin, written down the top five reasons why High Fidelity is the most Chicago movie in this cage match. While a film is set in Chicago, it doesn't gloat about it. You know, there's no shots of Lakeshore Drive, Wrigley Field, the Art Institute. It's just in a neighborhood, and Chicago is a city of neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, these are real Chicago apartments. Rob's apartment is in Rogers Park. Championship Vinyl, his record store, right on Milwaukee Avenue. Inside the apartment, there's posters from clubs like Shuba's featuring Chicago bands like Big Black. Rob wears T-shirts of Wax Trax and Alligator Records and a Decibel Audio shirt. In the record store, the extras are real Chicago musicians. Number three,
really?
Rob's use of public transportation. Wilson Red Line, Damon Blue Line, Armitage Brown Line. There's also a weird purple line scene in there that I don't really understand where he's going because he goes down the blue line.
Right.
Number four, the Cusacks. Joan and John, of course, but John Cusack's dad is in it, plays a minister, and John and Joan's sister Susie also in it. Four Cusacks.
Wow, four Cusacks.
Yeah, four Cusack rating. And finally, I saw this in the theater at McClure Court sitting next to Jay Levine and Marianne Childers.
That's Chicago royalty right there.
And therefore, this makes it the most Chicago movie of all time.
That's so dumb. That's great, Pete. That's so good. 312-981-7200. 312 says, I blame the movie High Fidelity for the downward slide of Bucktown and Wicker Park into the land of hipster doofuses, and I'm pretty sure the man bun got its start in that area because of this movie. So I think that's a vote for Wayne's World. What was the number one scene for you, Pete? What was the scene in High Fidelity that you say, that's the one that grabbed me?
Well, I guess you could always say, you know, the Jack Black scenes, the first scene where he shows up. you know, they're playing, as he called it, sad bastard music, and he wants to play Katrina in the Waves, and he just kind of rolls in as this crazy character. That's a well-known scene, the scene where we played in the montage where somebody comes in and asks him for...
I just called to say I love you,
and he says, no, get out of here.
Right.
But so I would say the Jack Black scenes were really the ones that are the most memorable.
What I liked about it, too, is that there's the Saturday record store scene where they kind of are shifting from one group to another or one salesman to another, and John Cusack puts on one of the records that he whispers in the other guys. He's like, watch, I'm going to sell 10 of these in a second, and everyone starts to bob their head, and then they look over, and they're like, what's this? And he gets all cool, like... Yeah, no, it's great. It's the, what is it, Beta Band?
Which is interesting because, like, every time I go to Reckless Records, they're playing terrible music. I was like, who's buying the, you're trying to get me out of here. In that scene where he kicks the guy, or he doesn't sell the Stevie Wonder record, he yells at the guy, and the guy's like, oh, make fun of the old Fuddy Duddy Day, Rob, John Cusack sticks up for the guy and yells at Jack Black. He's like, we're broke. Well, you need to sell records. What are you doing? Why are you kicking that guy out of here? And he's like, why are you going soft, Rob? You know, and I got to tell you, you're wearing a Cosby sweater.
Yeah.
Which is great because then the next scene is Lisa Bonet shows up as one of the singers in the...
So my last question for you is just the music, because High Fidelity, of course, plays off the fact that it's authentic and it's a record store and it's playing all this indie music. Does it live up to the hype in terms of the soundtrack and the music that's used?
66 real music artists are named throughout the film.
Well, that's a stat.
And I think they get indie... hipster, you know, it was before hipster was a term, I think, but they get the indie culture and music obsessives. They really do that really well.
All right, there you go. 312-981-7200. 224 says, High Fidelity's record store was an empty storefront at Milwaukee and Honoree, a block southwest of Milwaukee, North and Damon. It was once an old shoe store next to Nick's Bar. Gentrification goes on. I lived there. Anyway, High Fidelity wins in my humble opinion. Loved the criticism of the record store clerks and music snobs. So there you go. So we're getting some coming in here, but that's High Fidelity. We haven't heard from Eve and Wayne's World. That's right now. So give us the spiel on why you think Wayne's World should move on to the Elite Eight. Eve Ewing.
Okay, so first of all, I know I'm supposed to save my criticism for High Fidelity for later, which I will, but I just want to say I don't know why somebody in Rogers Park is commuting to Wicker Park, but we're going to let that go.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm not arguing Wayne's World as the most Chicago movie. I'm arguing it as the best Chicago movie. Okay. It represents the spirit of Chicago. It's unpretentious. It's unassuming. It's unapologetically silly, doing its own thing. It's really one of the only successful SNL movies ever made. It's pretty non-formulaic. Like, I would challenge somebody to find another movie like that. It's really sweet. It is partially features this really sweet friendship between Wayne and Garth. And then also... Wayne going after a woman who he is pretty comfortable in admitting eventually is just more talented and better all around than he is. Rob Lowe is, I mean, just a classic and amazing in it as this kind of like yuppie dude. Tia Carrere is also great in it. She performs all of the fictional band Crucial Taunt, I think, is one of the great fictional bands of our time. And she performs all the music that the band does in the movie. And she's pretty amazing. It's a super quotable movie. It brought like a lot of the key phrases that we think of being kind of emblematic of the 90s, like not, or, you know, like that's what she said, things like that, kind of brought those into the mainstream. Also directed by Penelope Spheeris, and I just want to give a shout out to you know, women directors that are consistently and continuously underrepresented. So the fact that this is a movie that came out almost 30 years ago and has a woman director and was like a you know, a super hit movie is really historically important. It represents so many good things about Chicago in just its kind of Midwestern goofiness.
I would say, would that be the only female-directed film that's in the Sweet 16?
I mean, it's a great point.
Because if you look at all the, I mean, The Fugitive's going to be Andy Davis, and then you've got all the Blues Brothers and all that kind of stuff. It's a lot of white dudes. But that is definitely a play. That is a plus for Wayne's World. I actually, you know, it's so funny because they're such emblematic and they're such iconic characters. You think it's Mike Myers and Dana Carvey in every facet, the writers, the directors, the characters,
but
it's
Penelope Spheeris directed it, yeah.
The other thing, too, is that Wayne's World is, I believe, the most successful box office SNL movie of all time. Blues Brothers is second.
Oh, easily.
Blues Brothers is second, and Wayne's World 2 is third. That's what I noticed on the when we were researching Blues Brothers. The other thing about this movie, too, Wayne's World, is that you see the seeds of what Mike Myers does with the rest of his film career in Wayne's World.
For sure.
All the Austin Powers kind of jokes and all this, the pacing and everything about his sort of mugging to the camera is all on display as Wayne in Wayne's World. It's pretty impressive. It really is. It's actually more authentic, I think, than when he gets to, you know, when he's doing Austin Powers and things like that. You're like, all right, it's all right. We get it.
Well, but, as you know, Canadians and Midwesterners, we share, there's a lot of cultural similarities there. So his Canadian-ness definitely plays as very Midwestern in the film.
So you believe that the spirit is there. Even though this film was shot in California and it's set in Aurora, there is the spirit of these hockey-playing, Western suburban cable access rockers, that's the spirit of Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, if you had asked me, you know, in the front end, like, does this qualify as being a Chicago movie, I might have disqualified it from being an Aurora set film. That actually matters to me more than the fact that it's filmed in California. But since it made it in, I think it's a better film. I think it's a better film than High Fidelity.
They have the scene, and I give them a lot of credit because they do the car spindle in Berwyn. They have a lot of Southside and inner suburban kind of icons and stat, you know, sort of whatever you call it, you know, like little monuments. John Schmidt,
little Easter eggs,
little Easter eggs. But that's it. I mean, that's all stuff that's done in exterior, but most of it, I think even the car ride when they're doing Bohemian Rhapsody is shot in California.
Yeah, we get a shot of kind of like driving on the Dan Ryan or something and then seeing the Sears Tower coming in, but you know.
Right, exactly.
Plus, they go to Milwaukee. What's more Chicago than that? They take a weekend trip to Milwaukee in the middle of the movie.
You know, I thought the same thing in the Alice Cooper scene when they go to Milwaukee. It's like, oh, it's in Milwaukee. But I'm like, yeah, that's a pretty Chicago thing to go see Alice Cooper in Milwaukee.
So true. You have one movie that takes place on Milwaukee Avenue and one movie that has an iconic scene in Milwaukee.
815 says, Wayne's World is the winner here. Eight Men Out is the better John Cusack Chicago movie. Eight Men Out got bounced early, lost to, I believe it was... The Fugitive in the first round. And then, Wayne's World is not a Chicago movie. No way. Not necessarily beating High Fidelity, but it's not a Chicago movie. All right. What about the music? Because that's a fun part, too, is that there's so much music in Wayne's World, and it really centers around classic rock.
Yeah, there's great music. I mean, so obviously I have to talk about the most iconic scene in the movie, which is the Bohemian Rhapsody scene. Which, you know, introduced that song to a whole new generation of people, and it actually brought Bohemian Rhapsody back onto the charts. It was, like, charted as, like, number two after the film came out, and Freddie Mercury had just passed away, so it's really, you know, pretty... I'm also a big Freddie Mercury fan, mm-hmm. pretty big Queen fan, so I really appreciate that about the movie, and this was easily the first time in my life I ever heard this song. But there's lots of other great music. There's the Ballroom Blitz cover performance at the end of the movie, which again, Tia Carrere performs, you know, and does an amazing job. And there's some original songs too that she also performs. So I just think that's pretty cool. Some good music
and
in there.
A ton of celebrity cameos, including
tons of cameos.
Said, Alice Cooper.
Yeah, some of the best cameos. I mean, Alice Cooper's in it, Meatloaf is in it. Chris Farley's in it. But the Alice Cooper scene is, I think, one of the great celebrity film cameos ever done. Billy Wake, Algonquin Four, The Good Land.
I don't know if you can beat a Bruce Springsteen cameo in High Fidelity, though.
There you go.
That's not bad. But the Alice Cooper thing, you know, the Alice Cooper, it's more than a cameo. I mean, we get full performance of an entire Alice Cooper song. So the movie just temporarily becomes like a concert film. And then, you know, I mean, well, again, I will save my criticisms of High Fidelity, let me just say this. It's telling that Bruce Springsteen appears to be only entirely self-serving to Rob. That will presage my forthcoming criticism.
Save it. That's great. Eve Ewing is representing Wayne's World, and Pete Zimmerman's doing High Fidelity. And we come back after this break. We'll flip the script, and they'll tell us why the other film should not move on. That's a fun part of the cage match, the ultimate Chicago movie cage match between High Fidelity and Wayne's World tonight. 312-981-7200. Stay with us.
I want them dead,
Chicago.
I want them dead.
He pulls a knife.
Who's the U-boat commander?
You pull a gun.
Hi, dude.
That's nasty. Why?
That's Chet, Gary.
Now, Dustin Kaufman presents the ultimate Chicago movie cage match.
Bueller.
Tell me your children.
312-981-7200, the phone number. 708 says, Wayne's World, despite a few errors, driving in Logan Square and then the great Indian statue on the roof of 63rd and Pulaski, 10 miles away. It's true. That's the one thing that with Wayne's World is, like every Hollywood movie, they can take two locations that you can't get to in the span of 20 seconds and put them next to each other. But that's not necessarily Wayne's World. That's everywhere. As we know, what was it, When Harry Met Sally? Was the movie where they were going the wrong way to be able to get out of town and go to New York?
They also drive through the quadrangle of the University of Chicago, which I can tell you are not allowed to do.
See?
Not allowed.
That's the thing. And we got a lot of flack for, including When Harry Met Sally, in this tournament. They got bounced in the second round. I think Ferris Bueller beat it. But because Harry actually met Sally in Chicago, at the University of Chicago, we kept it in. But you're right.
Also, Ferris Bueller. I mean, that was unfair.
Yeah, that is true. Ferris Bueller has already won, beat Cooley High. Although, I will say, Cooley High had a much better showing than I thought it would, especially the night of when people texting and calling in were all Cooley High. So Ferris
Bueller, yeah, that's a classic.
Ferris Bueller may have some tough times ahead if it had a tough stumble out the gate with Cooley High. But we'll see. That's coming up later. Tonight, it is Wayne's World versus High Fidelity. It's a movie about the Aurora Public Access crew versus the Wicker Park Record Store. Eve Ewing is on the line right now. The Cut called her the true mayor of Chicago, a sociologist, an author, and a poet. Pete Zimmerman, our producer on this program, is representing High Fidelity. The vote that we did, the poll on WGN Radio, which, again, got thousands of votes. You can tell by the way that it's just not moving at all. It is Wayne's World actually ticking up since we started this conversation. 62%.
The popular vote. The Justin, popular are you going to be yet another media elite that ignores the popular vote? Come on.
Exactly. 312-981-7200. You can vote by just texting in your favorite, or you can call us at this point and we'll include it. All right, so let's get right to the bashing here. I guess we'll start with you, Pete. What do you think? I mean, why don't you see Wayne's World moving on to the Elite Eight?
Well, I think you're right, and I think that Eve's right, and I think the listeners are right. This is a movie of quotable lines, but that's all it is. It's just a bunch of quotable lines. Some are good, some are not. I feel it should be disqualified for foisting schwing upon the world.
Right.
And I know, like, Eve says that it's, you know, it represents the spirit of Chicago. But it's not Chicago at all. There are so many scenes where they're driving their little AMC Pacer, and you can see palm trees, and they fake like it's Chicago. You know, they're driving in the suburbs. There's one scene where they show Wayne driving, and then they pan up to show like it's the Dan Ryan. But then you could see Wayne was on the passenger side. You could see the actor that was in there was on the wrong side.
The stunt drivers, slash passengers.
In the Bohemian Rhapsody scene, they're like, where are they going? They're like Chicago Joe's. They're at where the Gap is now, the Gap outlet on Diversey in Milwaukee. But then they end up at a Aurora bus stop somehow. What are they doing?
And they stop in the middle there at a music store to have him look at the guitar, right?
Wayne's house in California, not a typical Aurora house. I can't get over that. Right in the first scene where you meet Rob Lowe and he's in bed with Ione Skye and they're kind of flipping the channels, and they say something about eating Shakey's. I'm like, what? Who eats Shakey's?
That's not even a Chicago thing. Can you even get Shakey's in this area?
No. And then later they talk about eating crullers. No. Right. We don't need crullers here.
The Pete Zimmerman defense is, no, we don't eat crullers here.
When we do our bracket of the 64 best movies filmed in Los Angeles, this will be this could definitely be one of those 64.
Going for blood. All right, Eve, you heard that. Pete obviously has his thoughts about Wayne's World not being a Chicago movie. But what do you have to say about High Fidelity?
Well, first of all, in High Fidelity, there's one scene where there's a sticker on the counter that says Schwing on it. So clearly somebody involved in the production thought highly of this great film. But High Fidelity is, you know, it was made in a different time in terms of our understanding of, like, gender and the patriarchy. But nevertheless, it's the first movie I ever remember seeing as, like, a teen and being like, wow, this is a deeply sexist movie. Rob Gordon is self-involved. He is irritating. He is a misogynistic jerk. And the movie sort of knows he's a jerk, right? Like, people tell him he's a jerk. But for the most part, he's still presented as kind of our sympathetic protagonist, even though he is an objectively terrible, jerky person. He does not have a Midwestern spirit. He's terrible to all these women, right? And he gets this, like, 5-minute redemption arc at the end of the movie where he suddenly realized right. that he's been like, garbage the whole time. But that ain't doing it for me. It's not. And I thought about this because, you know, obviously, like, our era of prestige TV and whatever has made us think a lot about anti-heroes. So it's not that I'm against a character being terrible, right? Like, I watch Game of Thrones. I watch lots of shows where every person is a bad person. But I have a theory, Justin, that for an anti-hero to work, they need to at least one of the following. And I came up with this theory while watching High Fidelity. So you can call it like Ewing's theorem of High Fidelity, right?
Ewing's theorem of High Fidelity. Here it goes.
For an anti-hero to work, they need to at least be one of the following: redeemable, remarkable, or relatable, right? So at no point is Rob redeemable, right? He doesn't, you know, so somebody like, there are lots of characters that are anti-heroes, but they do some good things. And you're like, okay, well, I can kind of work with this. Remarkable, anti-heroes that are so terrible that you love to love them, right? Like Walter White in Breaking Bad, he's just totally over the top. He's a genius. Rob is entirely unremarkable in his misogyny. I have known a lot of Robs. Many women have dated lots of Robs. They're not special, and they think they're super special, which makes them all the more intolerable. And then relatable, right? So you need to be able to look at this person and say, well, even though they're doing this bad thing, I understand what their motivation was for doing the bad thing. We've all been there. We've all made mistakes. Rob is just, what is his problem, right? He just hates everybody for no reason. He treats women like garbage. He kind of low-key is seen trying to sexually assault one of his teenage girlfriends in the beginning of the movie. He just sucks. Like, he's just an unenjoyable, terrible person. And the best parts of the movie are the parts where the women in the movie tell him that he's a garbage human.
Right.
That's right. When Catherine Zeta-Jones, she's like, are you calling me because you're going through a thing where you need to call all of your ex-girlfriends because you've lost an understanding of meaning of your life? Right? She's basically calling out the fact that he just sees his relationships with women for their utility in helping him grow. And again, I think Nick Hornby, I think the Cusacks, they probably understand that he's not supposed to be a sympathetic protagonist. But dude, so many men watched this movie in the early 2000s, and they're like, that's me.
That's
right?
Me.
Like, that's me, and I'm cool.
Pete Zimmerman.
It's telling that who's the character everybody loves in the movie. We all love Jack Black, right? Because he's, like, nice and funny and you know, silly, and he has the best musical performance at the end of the movie. But Rob is intolerable, and that, for me, sinks the movie.
Hmm. That's a fascinating look at it, too. That's probably the most deep analysis we've had of one
you
of the
knew
sweet
I was
sixteen,
but like I knew a it. That's
and I feel like I knew it the minute that I knew. Pete's like, I'll take High Fidelity, and I'm like, well, you're going against Eve, and I'm like, you're not gonna. It's gonna be tough, Pete.
Great points. Great points. All. Wayne's World has a drum solo. Why?
It's an imaginary drum solo.
The only people that like drum solos are people that go to Guitar Center and like doodle with the drums.
Right.
Now I have to see one in a movie? That's like the worst part of a concert.
Well, I have a question. Did you guys think, and I almost shouldn't say this on air because I should just ask her first, but is the woman, the columnist that Rob has a crush on at the end of High Fidelity, is that's got to be based on Jessica Hopper, right?
That's who I thought it
How
might
many
be.
Women, brunette women, rock critics right, for right, the reader right. in the year 2000, you know, like, her first book is, like, the only book of rock criticism by a, you know.
Yeah, right, right.
So even that is, like, you take this person that's this great Chicago critic, and she's kind of just there to be a plot point in this kind of toolish dude's
you know. Well, I can tell you where Rob is now. Rob sold his store, and he lives in Aurora, where his son, Wayne, is downstairs hosting a cable access show. Rob did not stay cool. He wasn't as cool as he thought he was in the year 2000, and in 2019, wow, he is super-duper uncool.
Absolutely.
Eve, how do you feel?
He's a boomer.
Eve, how do you feel about the Lara Flynn Boyle character in Wayne's World? Now, that's somebody that
it's like the crazy girlfriend.
This girl is crazy. She's following Wayne around all the time. This is a crazy girlfriend.
Yeah, I thought about that, right? Because so the character of Stacy is his like nutty ex-girlfriend, and that's played for laughs. But I think, you know, just as many of us have known a Rob, many of us have known a Stacy, and Stacy's come in all genders. This gender happens to be a woman, but she's kind of like Rob, actually. Stacy and Rob would do great together. And she gives us this amazing line because she shows up and gifts Wayne a gun rack for some reason. And he says, I don't even own a gun, let alone many guns that would necessitate an entire rack, which is an amazing line.
Well, there's it's a good breakdown. There is some strange, Tim Robbins is in High Fidelity. I think his character's a little strange in that that film.
His ponytail gets marks.
Is he Ian?
And there's that strange scene where in the record store when he approaches him and he calls him out for essentially stalking.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he does. And then John Cusack's character says, oh, I don't do that anymore. He goes, well, you did it last night. You would think when you're watching that, I agree with Eve in a certain way, that it's like, that's a strange, that I'm supposed to be rooting for John Cusack's character, but he's obviously doing something that is way beyond the pale in how he sort of can't get over his ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, that's a perfect example, because Ian is portrayed, I mean, yeah, Ian is also clearly not cool, like, I don't know what she's doing with Ian, but Ian shows up at the record store and is like, hey, I'm trying to tell you as an adult to please stop standing outside. I know it worked in Say Anything when you stood outside somebody's house, but this is a different movie, and please stop calling me from Chicago's last remaining payphone in the rain outside the crib at like 2 a.m. 40 times. And he does it nicely. He doesn't come to beat him up. He doesn't come to like call the police on him. He's just like, hey, as an adult, can you please stop doing this? And Rob fantasizes extensively about like beating him up. And he's super wrong. He's bogus for that. And his whole redemption is like 5 minutes at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Now, the one thing I will say is that, yes, I agree that there are a lot of problems with High Fidelity, but it does take place in Wicker Park, and it does do a good job of explaining or representing the Reckless Records kind of experience that's very Chicago. Wayne's World, there isn't much. I mean, the Stan Makita's Donuts is a Canadian type thing. We don't really have those kind of donut stands that, you know, are going to have the hockey god on top of it. That's something that we don't have in Chicago, but they do in Toronto. They do in other places. So even in that regard, I'm like, that's so not Chicago that they're kind of putting a Hawks jersey on top of.
But that scene does, at the Makita's Donuts, who is a regular, Ed O'Neill, who True. Stars in another great Chicago show, Married with Children. So through osmosis, the Makita's Donuts ends up really working very well. Also, this is a version of like Wicker Park in the year 2000 that has no people of color, right? And like these were different times, and I'm sure people didn't notice or think about that. But you have these show at the Double Door and stuff where it's just like panning over like hundreds upon hundreds of white people enjoying themselves in a pre-gentrified Wicker Park. I was in Wicker Park in 2000. I'm pretty sure there were some other people that looked like me there.
Yeah, but I will say, though, like during the Lisa Bonet appearance at Lounge Jack's, you're right, there's probably no people of color, but the audience was perfect Chicago. Just a lot of frumpy white dudes. That's like the perfect that's the perfect audience that was at Lounge Jack shows. So they
dudes
got they
like
got
Rob
right.
Morgan, they love to write movies in which they end up with people like Lisa Bonet. That's another moment where the movie stretches credulity.
The Stan Makita's Donuts, yeah, it's in California, and yeah, I felt like Mike Myers is obviously a hockey fan. He, you know, even though he's a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, there's a scene where they're both wearing Blackhawks jerseys playing hockey, and Garth actually has a Tony Esposito Hawks jersey on. Wayne's just says Campbell, I think, on it. But then they're doing the play-by-play, and Garth says, like, oh, Wayne Gretzky with the shot. I'm like, you can't even think of a Blackhawk to say? Like, why do you have to do an Edmonton Oiler? He's wearing a Blackhawks sweater.
Nah, as someone who can literally not name a single other hockey player other than Wayne Gretzky, I find it very relatable that was the person who they chose.
The cameos, as you mentioned, Alice Cooper, Bruce Springsteen does show up in the film, but as you said, it's self-serving to Rob, of course.
It is. Yeah. Yes, it is. And it's kind of a weird shot because I read where John Cusack wanted Bob Dylan to do it, but Dylan wasn't available, so they went to Springsteen, and he couldn't do it here, so they had to go to New York. So it's kind of a weirdly shot dream sequence where Bruce shows up, but it's still Bruce.
It's also weird because Bob Dylan recurs other times, like he's discussed, and his music is reappears in the rest of the film, so it kind of seems like that's where they were going for this Dylan arc. But Dylan knew that this movie was not going to be that good, so he was like, "I'm not gonna be in it."
All right, I'm looking at the text, and it's all Wayne's World at this point. 312-981-7200. If you want to get your vote in for High Fidelity, you're going to have to do it now. We'll take our last break here before we wrap up and pick a winner between Wayne's World and High Fidelity in our Ultimate Chicago Movie Cage Match. One of these two movies is moving on to the Elite Eight. Is it Wayne's World? Is it High Fidelity? We'll find out right after the break here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. We are in the middle of our Ultimate Chicago Movie Cage Match. It's a double feature coming up at 9 o'clock. It's going to be Risky Business versus Hoop Dreams. And it'll be Peter Sagal and Scott Goldstein in here fighting that one out to see who moves on to the Elite Eight. Right now we're talking Wayne's World and High Fidelity. The texters are texting in and voting right now. High Fidelity celebrates Chicago. Many urbanite kids moved here because of it. And 312 says Wayne's World. 630 says vote for Wayne's World. A lot of Wayne's World. They're already moving on to who Wayne's World is going to face next. I hate to say that, Pete, but it seems like...
People moving here because of High Fidelity is a vote against High Fidelity.
That might be true. There is
that
a lot...
That basically reinforces what the earlier caller said. They're like, there's too many doofuses that moved here thinking they're going to be Rob Morgan.
Now, did you watch it, Eve, when you were in 2000? Or did
Watch
it? You did. Okay.
Yeah, and I rewatched it, but that's why it's so remarkable, is because, there's a lot of movies that you love, from 20 years ago, and you look back and you're like super cringing, and you're like, wow, I didn't even see this. But what was remarkable to me is I remember at the time being like, this is not good. Because I was like, none of these women have done anything wrong to him. They're all right. Everyone who says he's wrong is correct. His own sister is like, you suck.
But isn't that kind of the conceit of that film that that's the idea that he's this kind of irredeemable dude, and at the end he meets somebody that he's like, oh, I'm going to change my ways.
Well, this takes us back to Ewing's theorem of High Fidelity, which is that only works if he is either redeemable, remarkable, or relatable, none of which he is. Yeah. So he doesn't work for me as an anti-hero.
I loved Wayne's World when I was young. I quoted all the lines, but I haven't watched it in a number of years. I watched it this weekend, and I was like, why did I like this? Is SNL terrible too? And I'm like, yes, it is terrible. It is. It's like they have one good sketch out of 20.
This is going to sound like, not to be super corny, but I think it was really cool for me as a little kid, as a little girl, to see this like female rock star lead, right? Yeah. Who makes it very clear she doesn't really need Wayne. When Wayne messes up, she's not trying to chase after him. She's like, you're terrible. I don't really need you, and I'm ditching you. Wayne is also kind of a jerk to Garth, right? Their friendship gets severed. And then he goes back and realizes he's messed up. He apologizes to everybody. And his big win is a win for her. His big win is like, how can I help this woman that I care about get this professional opportunity? Yeah. And then she does this amazing closing performance. And then they have the multiple endings, which is funny. It's perfect.
It's very creative. Even the Alice Cooper and the backstage stuff and the Bohemian Rhapsody. It does. You're right. It doesn't fit what we know to be the format of an SNL film, and I have to give credit to Mike Myers, because it seems like he carried that on throughout his film career. This idea that he's almost in a weird way parodying movie making.
Yeah, for sure. There's the scene where they're cultivating their extremely complicated plan, and it all rests on this information that Chris Farley, like the roadie, casually told him. And he's like, good thing with that roadie gave us all that information. Yes, it seemed extraneous at the time, right? So they're kind of making this like meta comment on the way right. Goofy. I love heist movies. I love movies with complicated plans.
Right. And there's also in Wayne's World, there's the whole kind of, for the first time, I think, in history, kind of making fun of product placement. They do that whole thing, which comes back.
Yeah, they hold up Pepsi.
Yeah, they hold up Pepsi. But that at the time, you're like, what are you doing? But now that seems to be old hat. But that's the question about whether or not, and I think all of the movies that are moving on to the Elite Eight, it always comes up. We had this conversation about Blues Brothers. We had this conversation about The Untouchables. Does it hold up that 20, 30 years later, when you watch it again for this purpose to get ready, does it hold up? And that's a question that will ultimately undo a lot of these movies as they try to win this championship.
I had a problem with, are you mental?
You know, that's not good.
That's like, you know, like at the time I was like, oh, this is hilarious. And then I'm watching it now, I was like, are you mental? And you know,
is that the worst thing that Wayne's World does? I'm not saying that's good or bad, but I feel like we were watching Adventures in Babysitting. Adventures in Babysitting's whole punchline throughout is homophobia.
No, it's mostly goofy fun, Wayne's World. Yeah. I will say that the most Chicago thing about this movie was there's a scene where Rob Lowe, he's trying to get Tia Carrere to do something, be the band or whatever for this, you know, for Wayne's World or whatever. And he says that, he asks, is there a number where I can reach you at? And I thought that's very Chicago to end a sentence with a preposition.
Were you over by there? All right, so looking at the numbers, and just, you know, obviously there's a tough mountain to climb just based on the poll numbers that were polling so much in favor of Wayne's World. High Fidelity had to have a monster showing tonight in this 9 o'clock hour, and it didn't.
Ugh.
Wayne's World, more votes for Wayne's World than High Fidelity tonight. So that means that Wayne's World is moving on to the Elite Eight, beating John Cusack, a Chicago guy, and High Fidelity. Wayne's World now will go up against the Untouchables in the Elite Eight to see who represents the Maxwell Street Division in the Final Four.
John Cusack probably doesn't care because, you know, sometimes he's a Cub fan, sometimes he's a Sox fan.
Yeah, I gotta say, nothing but love for the Cusacks. This is not no besmirching of their good name.
There you go. So Eve and Wayne's World moves on to the Elite Eight with Wayne's World.
Woo-hoo-hoo!
See you later, High Fidelity and Pete. Eve, thanks so much for joining us tonight and playing the ultimate Chicago movie cage match. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So fun. All right, so like we said, it's a double feature, so coming up, Hoop Dreams versus Risky Business. That's the next one. Peter Sagal and Scott Goldstein in the green room, ready to rock here on 720 WGN. Stay with us.